Hello to all you hip skips out there,
and welcome to the jungle. Join Disney historian David Dr. Skipper Marley and art director and crooner Trevor Kelly as these former jungle skips explore the world of Disney, pop culture, and theme parks. But hold on tight, because just like a jungle cruise, their conversations often head deep into uncharted waters. Now, grab a seat and enjoy Expedition 37, Swimming Round the Jungle, Dragon's Love Coffee Creamer, and Part 1 with special guest Kevin Kidney. Move it up, skips!
We have a very special guest that we want to get to very, very soon, but I will always make time for treats, and treats. Dave says he has treats
from, I have treats.
From lovely fans
treats
for me.
Treats for you. Okay, the first one is from Tropical Imports Limited.
Yes, yes.
I've bought some of his candles before, and I love them.
Yes.
And I told another friend of ours, I said, hey, buy this candle for this girl you're interested in. She's going to love it. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so he sent me some candles. So I have one for you guys.
This is beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tropical Imports Limited.
I've been burning a lot of them. I love them. I'm addicted to his one, the Adventurers Club.
Okay.
That is my favorite. There's a couple that I've liked. I love the Adventurers Club.
Wow.
Now, okay, remember last Arizona Tiki Oasis, we were sitting on the roof for the party.
Yes.
Remember? And this guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, my wife's a big fan, but she's afraid to come talk to you.
They were very nice.
Remember I yelled her name and had her come over?
Yeah.
Right? They saw me like, oh my God, is Trevor here? Is Trevor here? I'm like, I'm a person too. But I'm like, no, it's just me. They're okay, we have a present. You got to give it to Trevor. So one to me and one to you. You are going to love it. You are going to love this present that you got, which is good to do very visual things on
a butt plug. What?
It's extra large, just like you liked it.
They know me. What do you got here?
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my goodness. I'll do my best to explain this. This is a Waffle House coffee diner mug.
Yep.
Oh my God. Thank you so much.
So I thought we should do our next episode. We should just put booze in it and drink out of our Waffle House coffee mug.
I think
mug,
this is a capital idea.
Yeah.
Oh my. Thank you so much. I'm going to be drinking out of this. I'm not even going to lie. Every morning, every day for the rest of my life. Thank you again to both you cats for those delightful gifts. And we want to mention, thank you again to the All Aboard podcast for your lovely trophies for our win.
I'm excited. We're undefeated champions.
That's right. And we're never participating ever again.
We are retiring undefeated champions.
You'll never touch us.
And what was yours?
Mine was the Aladdin's lamp, the 3D print of the Aladdin's lamp. And love it. It's on my desk. And I steal it out of my own office every day. In no way is that sad.
I'm not reliving the glory days. I can stop talking about it whenever I want.
That's right.
He made me a beautiful Jungle Cruise boat.
It is.
That's going on my tiki bar tonight.
It's delightful.
I love it. If it was the beginning of the semester, I'd put it in my office and keep it there. So maybe in September, it'll go with me to an office.
So thank you to all of you for your lovely gifts, and thank you to all of you for listening.
That's delightful. It is so kind, yeah.
We have a real treat for you today.
We do.
This is the first of a two-part episode now.
Our first ever two-part episode.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it is. For double the fun.
That's right.
Too much awesomeness to be contained in one episode.
It really is. So hunker down, Grandma. Our very special guest for you today from the Kevin and Jody Show, famed Disney artist, mid-century artist, tiki artist.
Yeah.
Kevin Kidney. So I guess the catalyst that made me think of having you on was Fantasmic's coming back. You worked on the OG original Fantasmic. I guess right off the bat, you were in the art department at that point?
Yeah.
How long had you been in there before Fantasmic?
I want to say about two years. Oh, I started in 1988, and I think we started working on the show in like late 89 or 90.
Wow. Yeah.
But we'd been working on it for... There had been a group of people working on the show, the River Show. It didn't have the name Fantasmic yet, but they'd been working on it for quite a long time before I got it involved.
I had no idea.
Yeah, because the show went through a whole bunch of different versions before the Fantasmic that we all know. They were kind of trying to tie something in with the Haunted Mansion and do this show called River Haunt. But this is all Fantasmic. Like this, there were pieces and parts of River Haunt that ended up in Fantasmic. So it's like the the timeline to getting to the final show.
It's the neon gorillas, isn't it? That's
you know what? They did have glowing neon, you know, blacklight characters in like fluorescent-y, glowy ghosts and stuff. Because they, what the River Haunt show was going to be kind of cool. They were going to project out of the top of the Haunted Mansion, like the ghosts flying through the air over to the river and then putting a show on. So you're kind of like seeing this happen. They weren't quite, I don't really know how they were planning to make this effect, but nevertheless, it was like some sort of a nighttime mist, right? And then it would come over and there was going to be a guy on the island who was a live actor who was sort of, if I believe right, if I remember correctly, he was the caretaker you see in the mansion with his shivery dog, the little guy. So he was out there on the river, you know, and seeing stuff in the dark. And then these ghosts come flying over, and then they basically put on the Haunted Mansion out on the river. You know, there's the ballroom ghosts, and there's an organist, and there was a dance number with a bunch of knights in armor.
That poor caretaker can't escape ghosts to save his life.
No. it's his
whole existence.
Was that the weirdest concept?
So off the top of my head, what I remember then it kind of changed to where they thought they would do a concert on the river stage. They were going to build like a river stage and have an orchestra out there and do Fantasia live. Oh. I'm not sure why they chose this, but they thought we'll do scenes from Fantasia and we'll project. You can see how this turned into Fantasmic, right? And we'll project up on these big, before the water screens hadn't come into play yet. So now they were actually going to put giant, like, drive-in movie theater screens, three of them, so that you could see them from three different views around that peninsula of the island.
Yeah.
And showing these simultaneous clips of Fantasia with this orchestra trying really hard to keep up with the, you know, follow the bouncing ball track.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was obviously, first of all, the big screens would have been super ugly and they would have either probably had to leave them up all the time during the day, which would have been atrocious, or take them down and put them up every night. And then on top of that, they had to pay all these musicians and their...
That's union. That's
their
money.
Union.
That's
real
money.
Real money. So anyway, it just kind of folded.
Can you imagine the difficulty it would have been getting everybody on edibles to leave New Orleans Square?
Oh my God.
After Fantasia Live. I mean, you would have been out there every night.
I would have loved, I didn't start taking edibles till like 3 years ago, but I would have started in the 80s. If there's
Fantasia every night.
I don't think you would have needed them. The show is so weird. And then a group of like the show director and who's the writer, Barnett Ritchie and several other folks went out to, I believe they went to Paris and saw a demonstration of these water screens that they could project onto mist. And then that changed everything. They were like, oh, this is how it's going to be. This is how we're going to do the projections. Because they love that the screens would just, you know, rise up out of the water and be there. And then instantly, as soon as you turn the water off, they're gone. You know, you don't have to strike the set at all. You just turn the water off.
That's probably one of the cooler things. And we've talked about Fantasmic a little bit, like the Florida one. The coolest thing about the Disney one is that it appears out of nowhere and then goes away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No hint of what's going to happen whatsoever.
Yeah. And evidently it's much bigger than the Florida one. I didn't see the Florida one.
Okay.
It's in its own show building and I'm not doing that.
I worked on the Florida one also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but originally they wanted the Florida version to be really different from the Disneyland version.
Yeah.
Like we were going to have the dragon. We were going to have Chernabog from Fantasia as the big monster at the end that Mickey has to imagine away. It was really different, but the best thing was there was a scene that me and the art director wanted to do based on 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Mm. So we even got to the model stage. I had built a little model of just the top deck of the Nautilus submarine, which was, first you would see the water screens come up and you see probably a clip from the film where the Nautilus is like in the water, you know, underwater and then kind of rising up to the surface. And then you would have, and you'd see the squid, you know, from the movie kind of coming toward the Nautilus. Then the mist screens would go down and we would have lifted up the top deck of the actual submarine.
Oh my God.
And then all the crew comes out of the hatch, out onto the little stage there, which is the subtop, and then battles this big squid. that we were going to have a big puppet squid, you know. And we just thought it would just be so much fun.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'm not sure why. I just remember it was sad when it got canceled. Aww. They were just,
that
you know.
That is so stunning.
I think
cool.
They just wanted to save money, and they already had a show that was designed and ready to go. And so let's just do it times two. You know, let's do it again.
Not
same
enough
show.
Neon monkeys on top of that Nautilus is probably why it got canceled.
Right? Yep.
They need to dance and fight.
I'm sorry. They were apes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please.
Damn dirty apes.
Damn dirty apes.
That's insane. Yeah. So when you got going on Fantasmic, did Jody work on Fantasmic?
No, he wasn't. I don't remember if he was working there yet. I think he came along a little after.
Oh, wild.
Yeah, I was there for several years before he started working there.
So how does that work? Do you just bounce around from section to section, or do they assign you like you're working on the monkeys or you're working on the snake?
Well, for me, I mean, back then it was just us two. It was just me and Tom Butch. There was an art director named Tom Butch who, he's retired now, but he had worked on television programs like sitcoms.
Yeah,
I think he was a designer on the set for Different Strokes back in the what was that, 70s, 80s?
Yeah.
You know? And several other shows, and then ended up working at Disneyland and designing shows for the theme park, and so. It was just, he was working on the first versions of Fantasmic that we know, you know, with Ursula and Captain Hook's pirate ship and all that stuff. And he was putting that all together as giant drawings. And then I got pulled in to help develop things into three dimensions, like the characters, the big puppets, Ursula, the crocodile, the dragon, and even like some of the little details on the floating rafts that have the princesses, you know, on that. So, yeah, there was a lot of parts and pieces to it. And I was just sort of off in my, you know, warehouse off property here in Anaheim, building models all day.
That's very cool.
Did they already have the show like figured out once you moved to model state? Well, obviously not, because they got rid of the Nautilus at a late stage and whatnot.
Yeah, well, for Florida's version.
Yeah.
But for Disneyland's, you know, Barnett Ritchie was the writer of the show. She wrote the script and had pitched the concept.
Yeah.
And the show didn't have a name. So anyway, she was really the one working with more like with Tom and the higher ups in the meetings and stuff.
Yeah.
So I didn't really work with her on that project, you know, closely. I was sort of off on my own thing. And then I had a crew of people that worked under me. So I was the head of the model shop.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I heard Jody had mentioned, if you could confirm this, the name Fantasmic did not show up till very late in the game.
Right, almost right at the end, like within, I want to say, weeks or barely a month, because the show was called Imagination. Imagination.
Oh, yeah.
That's the name of the show.
Wow.
And it was Imagination until some, I think Disney tried to like put a trademark on Imagination. And you can't do that. You know?
They tried to trademark the entire English language just in case they needed a word.
That is the most Disney thing possible. Like, no, that's our word.
Imagination? No, that's right. We own that.
So Disney, you know, they're great at coming up with these supercalifragilistic words that are just theirs, you know, really. And so I remember the sort of phantasmagorical, you know, all these kind of words were going around. And they even came to us and asked us if we had ideas for names. And we were kind of stumped, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was sort of hard to come up with something. I think I was a little intimidated by that. But anyway, I do know that when it was announced one day that, okay, it's going to be Fantasmic, all of the art department just rolled their eyes and said, that is the dumbest name. What is that? And we thought, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's not even, what is that? But you know, I mean,
it's trademarkable. That's
you
what
forget. You know, when you say it enough and you've used it for decades, everybody's like, yeah, fantastic. What's wrong with that? It's a great name. It's the perfect name. But it doesn't seem that way when you've only heard it for like a minute ago and you're thinking about it like that. And you've been working on this show for over a year. And now all of a sudden it's called Fantasmic. You kind of,
that would seem weird.
You wonder, is that what I was working on this whole time? What is that?
It's
just this made-up word that sounds like imagination gone wild.
Yeah.
You know?
Imagination Gone Wild is a show down in Florida, but it's not at Disney World.
It's a spring break show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta. It's 21 and over.
That's right. Yeah. And I did see one other thing, one more thing on Fantasmic, unless there's other
no,
stuff.
No, go. Keep going.
I did see when I was strolling through the internets, you working on a model of the dragon.
Uh-huh.
Assumingly for the original Fantasmic.
Yeah.
That looks eerily similar to the one that caught fire the other year. Like it had the whole thing. It had yeah. holding on to the turrets and stuff.
Right.
It looked nothing like the broomstick one that it right. had the show.
So originally the dragon from the very beginning was going to be the dragon with arms and wings mm-hmm. and holding onto the turrets with its hands and all of that. That was always the plan. That was always the design from the beginning. And all the models showed that. It was only until they were actually building the thing, this big puppet, that, you know, if you think about it, it has to appear on the stage really fast. So it has to fold up into a very small little hidden space under the stage.
Yeah.
And then when it's cue, it has to rise up and be incredibly big and tall.
Yeah.
And then when it gets killed, it has to go away really fast, you know?
Yeah.
Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so the only way for it to go is like to get folded all down and crumpled up into this small little box, you know? And it just got harder and harder to make that a reality. We just didn't really know how to do that.
Yeah.
And, the body was too bulky. So they kept taking away parts of the body, like just from the ground up. They just kept going up and up and up. Like, okay, we can't have a belly, you know, we can't have arms. We can't have all this stuff. It's just in the way.
Yeah.
And so eventually it was literally a puppet dragon head on yeah. a stick with some shredded fabric strips mm-hmm. that kind of hung down to yeah. sort of look like something. And then they just pumped a whole lot of smoke around, fog around the bottom of it
yeah.
to try to hide it, obscure it, you know, so that, and with the lighting and everything, they thought, well, you know, I think people were fine with it for a while. You know, it only got better and better as they were yeah. able to figure out ways to make it happen.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of it as a kid when it first showed up. It was insane. You'd never seen anything like that
right.
at a theme park, really.
Yeah. yeah.
And I realized because that design that you did essentially is what they made the new version
That's
with
right.
that caught fire. You and Jody, probably the only couple in the world that can say this, you have individually designed Maleficent dragons that have caught fire at different Disney parks.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
Jody has one too.
He has one too that in Paris or whatever, right?
That is yeah. a rare thing you can say on
yeah.
Earth.
Oh, yeah. That is a weird. That is a
very unique experience.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think only two people can say this.
Exactly. And we know both of them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the dragon that caught fire apparently had, you know, a gas line that ran through it, like with a liquid gas. You can kind of see that in the videos. It's so awful and painful to watch that
bet.
Poor dragon. But our dragon did not work on that. I mean, originally, it did not work on that gas principle. Our dragon breathed a secret ingredient. I don't know if you know this, but somebody had discovered that this coffee creamer, powdered coffee creamer called Cremora, is very flammable. If you blow it out into the air, it's sort of like when you go to Trader Sam's and they sprinkle the cinnamon and the
yeah.
and the fire just like,
yeah,
you know, it's just burning those little particles up. It's the same principle. So it would just shoot this Cremora out. You've never heard this before?
I've never heard this.
Yeah. So they, I believe that, you know, they went somewhere like Price Club or yeah. Costco or something and bought like a big pallet full of these big industrial sized Cremora canisters and
yeah.
then packed it with Cremora. The Cremora would blow out in front of the little pilot light. If you can remember there, I don't know if it, I don't think this was in the later versions of the dragon, but there was always like this little flame on the end of the dragon's lower lip,
mm-hmm.
like a little burning flame. Sometimes it would be the last thing, a bit of fire to go out. You
oh,
know,
you're okay.
like, what's that little? Anyway, it's a pilot. It's like a little light, a fire that, it's like a Bic lighter that just, this Cremora would blast past and create this big out in the air. And then it would just immediately be gone because it would burn up so fast. But that's what it was. It was
wow.
it was coffee creamer.
Why? That's why Fantasmic was sponsored by Coffee Mate.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
You know, it's just a big
that
puppet, and it's you know, it's just you have to create. I mean, Disneyland effects. You know, if you know the history, and you guys do of Disneyland, like, you know, it's just things are made out of salad bowls and
yeah.
you know, rolls of tape, and it's all just magic made out of stuff that you can find.
Wow,
that's insane.
Yeah.
when you're designing this stuff, do you go like, there's no way they're going to be able to do this? There's no way they're lighting the river on fire for real.
Well, no, I mean, we never questioned it because they had the, for that, like they had the whole gas line figured out as to how they were going to make the water progressively light on fire and, you know, go out into the middle of the river there. We were just sort of designing a show around the technology that already existed. So it wasn't like too pie in the sky.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Is there anything about Fantasmic that I have not asked the correct question about? Is there a stone left unturned about your time on Fantasmic?
Any cool story you want to tell us?
Well, it's online, so I don't know if you've seen it, but I did a little animation when we were working on the show. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
We had built a model. We were trying to figure out how this dragon would move. And the model was, you know, a scale model, probably about 2 feet tall, and was all jointed, ball and socket joints with a kind of a made of wood and foam rubber and styrofoam and all this stuff. And it was not a finished dragon. It was kind of a white model. Mm-hmm. And I had studied film animation in college, and I had a really cool 16 millimeter film camera for doing stop motion animation. And I said, let me play around with this. So took the model home with me to my apartment in Fullerton and over a weekend. And they were all freaked out, like, are you taking the model home? Because you don't want to lose the model or it gets out. It's off Disney property or whatever. Yeah. You know, they'd been working on it for a while. So I had it on my dining room table, and I put a screen behind it that I had, with tape, I had mapped out little squares like a graph, right? So that you could see the range of motion as the puppet moved in front of these little lines. You know, you'd be able to tell how the arc of the animation and everything. So anyway, I plotted it out because we had the script of everything that the dragon had to do. You know, it had to sort of be terrorizing, you know, everybody. And then it has to sort of notice Mickey. And then it has to kind of laugh, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And then it has to start breathing fire and lighting, you know, everything on fire. And there's all this chaos. And then it has to die, you know, this big screaming up to the heavens, you know, death. And so just using that, I just ran the puppet through its paces, you know, one frame. It was like 24 frames a second, you know, literally. And I had it all marked out. And there were a lot of parts. And this was the early model that had arms, and it had the wings, and it had the turrets that it grabbed and everything. So it was a whole animation of that. So I filmed this in black and white, no sound, just as a tool for them to work on the programming and everything for the puppet. And it was a huge help for them, and they actually it was a little 16 millimeter roll. It took like a week and a half to get developed, so I was kind of worrying, I hope it turns out. And then the film was such a hit that like all the upper management at Disneyland was like, this is great, we're going to use it on our marketing. And apparently it got shown on the Disney Channel, although I'm not sure exactly where. I just had heard that it was taken away and sent to the Disney Channel for transferring to video, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
And then, anyway, they gave me the film back, so I still have the reel, which is neat. But years later, on the 20th, I think it would be the 20th anniversary of Fantasmic, they had a kind of a nice VIP evening 20th anniversary show. But we got invited to that, and it was really fun because we had like a little reception at Club 33 and then got to go sit. And it was fun because I was sitting kind of with a lot of the people that I had worked with on Fantasmic, which was incredibly neat, like a really cool reunion.
That's very cool.
And then I was really shocked before the show came up. You know, they had like a pre-show that was special, kind of tagged on to commemorate it being a special occasion, right? So this announcer is like, in honor of the 20th, you know, we have this behind the scenes making of the show, you know? And so then they kind of went into the making, and they showed some of the interviews from way back when with Barnett and Tom Butch and like all the different people who'd worked on the show. And then they showed my dragon film.
How cool.
On the mist screens. This is on the water screens out on the river.
No way.
Yeah. And got super touched by that.
Well, yeah.
Like that doesn't happen very often, but I was like, this is like the most magical thing ever at Disneyland. I couldn't believe it. I was really touched.
Growing up, living in Anaheim, growing it up and everything, and working at the parks, to see something you made shown on a giant water screen in the park, that's got to be insane.
Well, and you know, Fantasmic was only supposed to last like 5 years. Like when we, And that's wow. that's stretching it, because they the budget was kind of, it was big, but it wasn't huge. It was, you know, they kept, as always, kept cutting things, and they kept telling us, well, you know, we can't really warrant spending too much money on this particular detail or whatever, because the show's only going to run for a couple of summers and then it'll get replaced with something else. Okay. So like a lot of my puppets, you know, like the Ursula, the Sea yeah. Witch, you know, she was a big inflatable balloon, mm-hmm. and because they couldn't really, we couldn't really do anything like a big AA figure or something like yeah. that because of the cost. And balloons were easy and they go away and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, over the years, it kept ripping and they kept patching her up. And so she had like these big weird tape squares on her head toward, you know, her rear end and, you know, trying to keep her in the show. And she eventually went away because the puppet just wore out and they weren't really wanting to do it again.
Yeah.
And wow. so they retired her. But
Ursula's no longer in Fantasmic.
Well, she is, but she's okay. only really seen on the miscreants. She's not okay. a puppet. Yeah, she's nope. not a three-dimensional puppet.
My policy is no puppet, no piece. That's one of my favorite parts yeah. is when Ursula came out.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts of that whole thing.
Oh.
And that and the elephants that make you feel like you're on LSD.
Pachyderm.
Oh, pachyderm.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's
pink elephants
Dumbo,
on parade.
The pink elephants
yeah.
on parade. Yeah.
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 That terrified me as a kid. And it brought back some memories when I saw it on Fantasmic.
Yeah, you know, I love that part of the show because that it is
part.
Just so wild. And it's like one of the best parts of Dumbo, too.
Mm-hmm.
And but it worked so well in Fantasmic. It's just such a neat thing to see.
My very first day working, I think I might have shared this, so I'll keep it brief. My very first day as a Disney cast member ever was doing crowd control for Fantasmic. Oh. And I didn't even know where to go. Like a high school kid had to show me where to go for my job. And the guy's like, so go here. And he's like, I go, what is this? He says, you haven't seen Fantasmic? I'm like, no. He's like, come here. And he put me in the queue for the Mark Twain that was closed. He's like, here, just stay in here. Make sure nobody comes in. But I want you to watch it.
Oh,
so I just sat there in the dark
nice.
By myself, just in awe.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Like when the Columbia comes out and the can't scare the hell out
oh,
of me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm right there by the Mark Twain. It's coming right by me. It's a huge
yeah,
ship.
Cannon.
I don't notice it.
Yeah.
Because I'm staring at the screens across the river and then boom, and it's 10 feet away from me.
Yeah, I love
it. I wet myself is what I'm trying to say.
Was that the same night that the guy got naked and ran?
Naked man.
Yeah.
Because I watched the first time, you know, the boats.
What?
You know, there's the rafts. They come out. Are the gorillas first or the princesses first?
I think the gorillas.
Whichever way it went. The gorilla floats came out. So it was the second show. So I know how it went. And so I remember watching the princess boat. I watched it come, and then I heard the engine just go, like, and I watched the front of the raft just totally dip into the water. And I go, I know enough. He's trying to stop. And then I see like a security guard run around and gets in the water. And I'm like, what the hell? And they're dragging somebody out.
What?
A guy took off his clothes by Big Thunder.
And jumped in the river?
Jumped in the river and was trying to swim across.
Oh, wow.
And
never heard this.
One of the raft guys saw him. Whoever was driving the raft with the princesses on it, and called it in as he threw this thing into reverse.
Yeah, he would have gotten hurt.
Yeah.
Besides being naked, he also would have gotten really bad.
Yeah.
If he'd picked the wrong part of that show, like when the river lights on fire.
Yeah, right?
So exactly.
I'd been a cast member for like a grand total of 4 hours. And I'm like, so do people get naked and swim in the River of America every day? Like, is this?
No.
And they're like, that never happens.
That never
I'm like,
happened.
Never happened. Nothing weird ever happened again.
That's wild.
But that was my introduction to being a cast member.
That's strange. What year?
And
would that
I'd
have
never
been?
Seen it before. That was the spring of 1996.
Oh wow, 96.
And I fell in love with it that day. That was
That's
great.
Funny. I was working at Disneyland still in the art department then.
Oh, Fantasmic was 2 years into its 5-year run at that point.
Yeah. Right.
The only naked person I've ever seen at Disneyland was that man.
And Tarzan.
Tarzan can't be naked because you can't show nipples, but we can
really?
Talk about that later. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Tarzan didn't have nipples.
Nope.
Well, he had like a cape or something.
The late great show director at Disney, Diane Doyle, a great family friend. Designed some of these shows, and they made Tarzan wear a bodysuit originally.
Oh.
And they were like, you can't show nipples. And that's what they like, you cannot show nipples. And so he had to wear a bodysuit. If you see old pictures of Mowgli from the 60s, he's in a full
bodysuit. Yeah.
Because you can't have nipples.
Yeah.
If God wanted you to see nipples, you would have had them.
I've never seen Tarzan.
And so they gave him a weird, like, I don't know what the hell it was. It was like a shawl.
Well, yeah, they gave him like a fur
shawl thing.
Like a stole.
And it was just enough to cover his nipples because the guy was cut. He was
Walt famously anti-nipples. He would always wear a bodysuit under his suit.
Exactly. Yeah. He was a never nude.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's very
so,
funny.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at old pictures, he's either...
Wasn't it like when Little Mermaid came out and King Triton?
Oh, yeah.
Nipples. Everybody was sort of shocked by that.
Like, they must have been. I wonder if I'd have to Google it, if on the new Little Mermaid ride he has nipples.
They probably just gave him big pecs, so you probably you don't notice. We can put nipples on.
Disney, they come and go on Disney characters.
That's true.
Yeah.
Just like in real life.
Just like
in,
Yes.
Dave, I'm going to throw it to you. Okay. I've asked, I think, every phantasmic question I ever had in my head.
There's probably more. Okay. So you've done a lot of great things. You've done Phantasmic. You've done parades. You've done some beautiful, beautiful artwork. But who cares? You started out, importantly... Did you start as a Jungle Cruise skipper?
Mm, yeah.
Like, really, let's be honest, it's the best job at the park.
There's, I was so happy. I in all my
stuff.
Yes.
You know, in all my 20 years as a cast member, and then all my other, I don't know how many other years after, as an honorary Disney artist doing Disney stuff, but not as a cast member.
Yeah.
I've never had more fun than in all of that, than being a Jungle Cruise skipper, actually working in attractions, all of them.
Were you there?
Let's see, that would have been 1986. I was hired. Okay. So Michael Eisner had only been there for a year, barely. I think he took over in 85.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was just the best. I got hired out of college. It was the first year of the college program, which is still going, you know, where they go to schools and recruit.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I remember there was an ad in the school paper. I was going to the University of Arizona down in Tucson. And in the paper, I think I was eating lunch and there's an ad, you know, work at Disneyland, make friends, have fun, you know, and all this. And I thought, that here I go. So when the recruiters came to campus, I was there in line, you know, I'd filled out the form and I was ready and I got hired. And I was very surprised because I would have done anything. I would have happily scraped gum off the sidewalk at Disneyland. It would just been so much fun to be there.
Yeah.
But I was blown away when they said, yep, we've placed you in Adventureland, Frontierland attractions. And you're going to be trained on the Jungle Cruise and all that. So when my first day, I got into a costume, into my Jungle Cruise costume and went out there. Uh-huh. And they said, oh, we're so sorry. We have too many people training today. So for this week only, we're going to put you at the Tiki Room. And I was like, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I had to go back, change clothes.
Yeah.
And come back in white polyester pants and blue Keds and this orange polyester print shirt. And go work at the Tiki Room, and it was the most fun ever. I had such a blast. And then the next week, I was trained on Jungle Cruise.
Tiki Room is such a cush gig in terms of running an attraction.
It was great. There were the people who worked there were lazy skippers that didn't want to work, and then skippers who were like, their voices hurt, so they got sent to
Tiki
to heal for a while. Those things were like, a tiki shift was gold dust. I just loved it.
It was
I
great.
Just held on to those things.
The show itself is so beautiful. When you were there, was the Barker Bird still there or was it gone by then?
No Barker Bird. But the show was the longer show with the Enchanted Fountain and the Baccarol, you know, a number that's been cut.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the show is like
5 minutes?
5 minutes or so shorter.
Really?
Yeah. So it was the beautiful part of the show. It was where it was just everything got pretty and blue and tranquil, and the water just did sort of a dancing waters effect with music and all the birds whistling, and it was great. But after a while, word was, short attention span, Americans can't deal with this, they get fidgety and they want to leave and they want to go ride a roller coaster or something. So they had a chance to revamp the show that was cut, which was really sad. Because I love the show. I love the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was sad to see them cut stuff and try to keep it quick. You know, you don't get that arc of having been through a thing. But a lot of people apparently don't want to go through the thing. You know, they just want to get in and then get the heck out.
Exactly.
Go do something else.
They want their conditioned air.
Keep it coming.
Yeah.
Keep the thrills coming.
And now you can do more, maybe one more or two more shows a day.
Well, there's also that.
Yeah. That's not going to improve a lot, but you can do like 3 an hour now because I think it's 19 minutes long.
That's true. You get more shows in. That makes sense.
So you get a little bit more of a
higher capacity.
Yeah.
I always enjoy it.
The Tiki Room, that's a hell of a way to start your career.
Absolutely.
It was a blast.
And so being a skipper, did you enjoy that?
I did. Yeah. So I did it for summer of 86, summer of 87, summer of 88. But that summer, also, I got hired in the art department. So I did a big no-no, which was I had two jobs at Disneyland at the same time.
What?
Yeah, which you can't do.
Why like not?
That, you cannot do that.
Really?
You no.
I didn't know.
You know, you can't have two jobs at Disneyland. So I did. I had my daytime job. I just went and asked my scheduler supervisor, can I just work nights at Jungle Cruise and attractions? Can I just work nights?
Yeah.
So they would have me come on at like 5 and work till midnight, right? That would be or 1 o'clock in the morning, because it was summer, so the park's open late.
Yeah.
So we had that during the day, 9 o'clock in the morning till 5, I was in the art department wearing a tie and a name tag and designing stuff. And then quick, run to the park, drive, park my car, get out, go change into whatever costume I was, you know, whatever attraction I was working, yeah. Big Thunder, whatever, and then just work there. It was the only way to do it. They wouldn't, they wouldn't transfer me, so out of attractions into the art department. So I just said, well, yeah. I'll just do them both. It was really a strange thing. I could not do that today, but at that time, I was just thriving on the excitement of this is so fun and so neat and so cool that I'm just gonna do it. But you know, it just killed me, because I did it for several months before finally transferred full-time into the art department, and I suddenly had evenings and I could sleep
and the social life,
I could have friends again,
you could eat food
and all that. Yeah,
so you work Jungle and then you finally transfer over there. What was your last day at Jungle? You do anything?
Oh, yeah. I got pushed in the river.
You got pushed in the river.
Yeah.
That was the tradition.
It was.
For decades.
Yeah. Going back to the 50s.
Yep.
Up until, I don't know, the 90s, right? Then all of a sudden everything changed.
Yeah.
But now now it's unheard of. You know, I'm sure they would be like, we would never do that. Well, you did it for like 40 years.
Now they don't know how to run their attraction.
Yeah. They can barely keep the boats moving.
If you listen to the last episode of the podcast, they got a team of monkeys running that attraction now. They don't.
Did you swim around at all, or did you get immediately out?
No. I was unaware of this tradition at all. Mm. So, you know, I remember being very sad when I took my last boat around.
Yeah.
And I was working evenings, of course, so it was late at night. It was like after midnight, and I remember they said, you just take one more trip around, and I had my boat full of people, and they're all tired because they've been at Disneyland forever, and I said something like, this is my last Jungle Cruise boat ever, and they just thought I was just joking, like, this is part of the spiel, like, say goodbye to the people on the dock, we may never see them again, and by the way, this is my last Jungle Cruise ever. I mean, they probably were like, yeah, all right, whatever, but it really was, and so I was very like, oh my goodness, I'm so sad, this is, goodbye, elephants, you know. So anyway, when I get back onto, civilization and go back to the lead desk there, and they had my time card, because we had to punch time cards back then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was very old fashioned.
I remember that. Yeah.
And the lead, who I can't remember who it was at the time, said something like, well, it was sure great working with you. And while he was saying that, somebody grabbed my hat off of my head, and then they shoved me in the water. And I was so shocked by this. And I reached out, it just flailed my arms and grabbed whatever I could, which was another person, and pulled them in too. Yeah. Who had his
get.
And he had his hat and a wristwatch on.
Oh, so no.
He was like, oh no. But anyway, we landed in the water and we were right there at the load there. And we're in a safe distance from the rail. But I was just like, oh my gosh, you know. And everybody was there clapping and like, you know, thank you. You know, it was so great working with you. Like everybody was there and I'm in the water. And I said, I don't know why I said this. Can I swim over to the island? You know, cause there's there's those islands, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, sure. And this is in the middle of the night. You know, cause they're like, well, I think we've just sent the last boat out. So, you know, that's the end of that. So I remember dark and murky and disgusting water. Yeah. So kind of over, trying to keep my head always above water. And then over onto the island, I, you know, sloshed out of the river onto the dirt and or concrete or whatever it is and walked around. And I then kind of got back in the river and then back up on the island. So I tell people that I have swam the whole ride, but I think really in reality, I kind of dipped in and out and around through the ride, because I remember being way back over by the veldt.
Oh, wow.
Wow. You got back there.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I was sort of dog paddling like 20 feet from behind a boat. It was the last boat of the day. Oh.
Did anybody notice you? That would have been
no one saw me. And then I got back onto land. I was not going to go through the hippos because would be so dangerous. And then I did not swim under Schweitzer Falls. But I got back in like around the rapids and Trader Sam, and then just sort of dog paddled a distance back to the dock behind the boat. So as the boat pulls in with all the guests, they're getting out of out of the boat, and then somebody gives me an arm, and they pull me out, and I'm soaking wet.
And then the hallucinations start.
Right?
Well, I remember I had
And the rashes.
That's right.
Well, I had to walk back to wardrobe to turn my costume in, you know? So I go to the locker room and change into my other clothes, and then I have this big sopping armload, wet wad of costume, socks and everything, and I just plop it on the window there. And the lady who's checking the costume in, she goes, "Let me guess, it's your last day." Yeah. But it was gross because there's so many leaves have landed in that water and sunk, and they don't go away. They just turn into like cooked spinach at the bottom of the river. So as you're in there, there's sludge. There's like a black green sludge that fills your shoes and fills your pocket in your little breast pocket. And it goes in little rivulets inside your shirt, down your back.
Yeah.
And I remember going home and like looking at myself in the mirror and like, ugh, took a shower. And it was really gross. But I ended up getting a sinus infection like a day later.
Wow.
There you go.
You got out easy.
You were lucky. He could have got the monkey pox.
That's right.
You may be, and I mean this seriously, the only person I've ever heard of that swam to a river. I know people that have like swam in parts of it, but nobody who swam from the dock to the island and then just kept going. I don't know of anyone else in Jungle Cruise history who's ever done that.
Yeah, I can't. But yeah, I've never heard anyone ever.
I don't
either.
To get back to Kevin's comment about the plants, we'll tell this another episode about the methane monster.
What?
What's the methane monster?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Methane monster.
The methane monster. Yeah. Should I tell you now?
Sure.
Let's do it now.
All right. So it may not have been this way when you were there, because there was the line that went right in front of the dock, and then there was like the Dominguez line, right? There used to be a track that went all the way back onto the main line.
Oh,
okay, and so that's right.
They took that out when they built the Indiana Jones version. And so, but now there's just like a dead zone there. And so right where the two boats that are parked out where you can see them, where they stop, like by the, like you can see the little hut in the background, right there is where all the leaves and debris kind of get pushed.
Oh.
And so from the circulation of the water, it's constantly being moved around, and that's a dead zone. So a lot of the organic matter sits there.
Oh.
And I've seen it and experienced it. But during the summer, late in the summer, like August or September, at night, the water's real calm, and then suddenly just these big bubbles pop up, and somebody yells, "Here it comes!" And it is the strongest smell of methane, like rotten eggs. And guests are like, "What is that?" We're like, "It's the methane monster." And then, like these, the living matter would
jungle
decompose,
burping.
And you'd watch it pop up.
Oh, wow.
And so it was the methane monster. Every summer, it would appear.
Super gross.
So, pro tip, if you've eaten pizza port and you need to relieve yourself, just stand in line at Jungle and blame it on the methane monster.
Late at night in the summer.
That's right.
But
it's the methane monster. It's not me.
Now for the most dangerous part of our show, the return to civilization. If you've enjoyed the show and want to show some support while also getting some adventurously good extras, visit patreon.com/thejunglepodcast. Also, if you could be so kind as to follow the lads on Instagram, I know they'd be thrilled. At Dr. Skipper Marley and at the.trevor.kelly. See you hip skips next time in the jungle.